Hey, Brad.
Hi.
I just noticed something this morning.
What's that?
Well, it's our 99th episode.
Whoa, that's a pretty big...
Well, hold on. It's episode 99.
Okay. What is our counting methodology on this show?
It's technically...
It's a bit fuzzy.
Because of episode zero, our 100th episode. So congratulations.
Well, thank you.
100 episodes.
Same to you, but I don't see the big round three-digit number there. So to me, I don't know that it actually counts.
Well, I'm celebrating today. You can observe it next week on episode 101 if you want, I guess.
I forgot my party hats and streamers and noisemakers, so I guess I'll have to wait. How did that happen? How?
Well,
somewhere in my mind, it feels like we just started this podcast.
There's a Twitch bot on my Twitch stream that says, hey, check out Will's newish podcast. And I think I changed it from new to newish after episode 52. Because somebody was like, yo, your podcast is a year old. It's not new anymore.
Of course, you had a rigid methodology of, okay, we hit the 1 year mark. Of course, the person who does this podcast waited until exactly 1 year in.
Yeah, I don't know if it was exact, but yeah, that was the thought. It's funny, we've been doing it long enough now that I don't remember the stuff we talked about on the first few episodes anymore.
Yes, I am increasingly living in fear of repeating ourselves, like doing another battery episode without realizing it.
I don't think I could forget the battery episode, but yeah, I think like, what are we going to do for episode 100? We should have watched Hackers or something really stupid and good.
That would have been great. That would have been a good, fun, celebratory kind of mainstream idea for a big 100th episode spectacular. Oh, well.
Yeah, really bring in some new audience, get people excited.
We do have some we have some commitments on the books.
Yes, we owe people something.
Yes, we do. We definitely have promised some stuff.
We're going to create our own scene drama if we're not careful here.
Yes, I think a couple times on the Discord it has gotten close.
So the thing that's weird to me about this is the first time I've ever done a podcast that we didn't do like extra episodes along the way. So when we hit episode 104, I think we missed one episode when we were both sick 1 week in like the early days.
Did we?
Yeah, like, or it was like around Game of the Year time or something like that. And I was sick and you could, so we just were like, fuck it, we can't do it this week. But like all told, 104 episodes will be our 2 year anniversary.
Ah, those heady days of you driving up here every week and sitting in my living room.
I'm not going to lie. I don't miss getting up on Saturday morning and trucking up to your living.
I don't blame you.
I enjoyed seeing you in person. Yeah. We had lovely conversations. It was nice to come up and see the city, but driving up the path to your house from my house is my least favorite road in San Francisco to drive.
Really? What highway is that?
19th.
Once it turns into 19th.
Once it turns into 19th, yeah, okay. It's like, it's four lanes. It's not separated.
Oh, I didn't put two and two together because in my mind, 19th Avenue is a street. And then whatever that highway, once you break out of the city and it's just like that coastal.
Oh, 280.
Like those are different streets in my mind, even though technically they're contiguous. But like 19th is a nightmare. Yes.
19th sucks. It's undivided four lane and there's a buttload of stoplights and they're not timed. And there's usually congestion at the end where the road goes into the park and it just takes forever.
Yeah,
so I would often drive the much further way and take an extra 10 minutes to not have to be on 19th, which was fine.
Yeah. Also, that was back in the halcyon days when being in the same room with someone unmasked that you don't already live with was just a thing that people did and not something that raises the hackles on the back of your neck.
Yeah, you could, like, it was before you could kill me by breathing.
You could just hang out in a room with people at their houses and it was cool. And not nerve-wracking. Father, that feels like so long ago.
It was so long ago. It was a year and a half ago, Brad.
I guess so. But wait, almost 2 years.
No, a year and a half. Well, no. The times before you started being able to kill me with your breath, that started a year and a half ago. Yeah. Almost 2 years for the,
I guess we were doing it in person right up until the pandemic, weren't we?
Almost every week. I think we tried one remote before.
That's right.
There was, didn't we go get breakfast or something to talk about ideas? Like my usual process on new podcasts is you got to come up with 10 episode ideas before you should start recording. Cause if you can't do that, then you're doomed.
Yeah. I don't think we did that.
And I feel like we sat down and had a nice breakfast and chatted and came up with like three really good ideas. And then we're like, this sounds like fun. Let's do it. Yeah, it worked out.
It's been a long road. And yet also the last 18-ish months might as well not have happened.
Yeah, the longest March 8th ever.
The mental time compression that's occurred as we have done the majority of this podcast has made it a very strange experience.
Does it ever feel like you just wake up like there's no change in days?
Dude, we're in the fog months in the city here right now.
Like, oh, yeah, I'm aware.
I should have been tracking the hours of sunlight we have seen over the last 3 months. It's minuscule. Like every single day you wake up and it is just a white fugue outside. And it is that way 24 hours a day with like three exceptions a month.
You all should come down on like a Saturday afternoon sometime. It's often sunny down here in the like the mid afternoon.
It is purely a middle of San Francisco problem. If you go like 30 minutes north or south of here, it's nice and sunny. And but. Yeah, like having no like no time of day awareness because of that, like it all runs together badly.
We used to live in the Inner Sunset, which was the same. And here we get the same number of days that have fog. But like the thing that is different is from like 11 until 3, there will be no fog.
That's all you need. Just let it burn off for at least a chunk of the midday and you're good.
It's perfect because then at like 5 o'clock, it starts getting cool again. Right. And it's like good sleeping weather. Yeah. It's really nice. I really like it.
Oh, I should come to Pacifica.
Yeah. Pacifica is great. Highly recommended. Plus, we have the best Taco Bell ever. Still a Taco Bell, though. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
I should have cleared my throat before we started, Brad.
Uh-oh. Wait. Hang on. I've been to the clinic. They scoped my cords.
Why did we not talk about this?
Because we talked about it last week, I guess. I could hear you struggling not to clear your throat.
I just muted and coughed a little bit.
Yes, I saw.
You've seen the Giger-esque horror that lives inside your mouth?
I couldn't look at it as it was happening live. I could not look at it. First of all, I did not expect the camera to go through my nose. I don't know why.
Did it through your nose?
Wait, did they not do that for you?
No, mine was a big stick that went straight in my mouth.
Oh, dude, it was a tiny, like when I saw it, first of all, I was like pleasantly surprised at how svelte it was.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm trying to think what the diameter of this thing was. It was like...
like a thread?
Way thinner than a pencil. Like way thinner than a pencil. It was like this very tiny, tiny little flexible plastic cord with a camera on the end.
Mine was like 3/4 of an inch probably.
Oh, wow.
It was a stick.
Okay. There have been some upgrades since your time, it seems.
Wow. That's nice.
I guess to put it in context, it was thin enough to go through my nose. Like it was thin enough to snake it up through the nose and down the throat.
Yeah, they didn't have to put a funnel on there to stretch it out or anything, I guess.
No, definitely not.
But, wow, that's horrifying.
Did they numb your...
No.
No?
She was just like, good luck. I'm not going to touch your soft palate so you won't throw up. But if you start feeling like you're going to gag, let me know and I'll pull the camera out.
We determined off camera that we actually saw the same doctor. So like...
yeah.
All the other variables were the same except for the camera in our... respective experiences, I guess. But yeah, they squirted a little bit of a numbing agent up my nose. And then 5 minutes later, here was this little snake camera going up and down.
Wow, that's neat.
And then they directed my eyes to the monitor. And I was like, nope, just do what you need to do. I'm going to read these lines as you ask me to and do all these weird vocal sounds that you want. And then not.
Oh, man.
Intentionally not watch what's happening because oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's squeamish.
Real body horror in there.
I haven't signed into the web portal yet to see if that material is available.
It's a miracle of evolution, your vocal cords.
I don't know that I want to see it again. They reviewed some of the footage with me, so I did see it.
Okay.
Ultimately, but boy.
You got nodes?
Nope.
Nice.
Nope. Anatomically, everything is good, they said. I'm headed for the same vocal therapy course that you had.
Beautiful.
It seems so.
You're going to learn a lot about yourself on this journey, Brad.
Yes, a voyage of discovery it shall be.
And hopefully you'll be able to talk better. You'll be able to use your mouth better afterwards.
Yeah.
Speaking of using mouths, we wanted to celebrate this 99th episode spectacular today.
Mm-hmm.
By watching, we found out a couple weeks ago that you have never seen one of the seminal works of our people.
Yes, on Brad's big list of movies he's never seen.
The Matthew Lillard, Angelina Jolie, seminal 1995 classic. Hackers. You've never seen Hackers, Brad.
Well, now as of as of about 14 hours ago, I have.
Starring Johnny Lee Miller as Dade Murphy / Crash Override / Zero Cool. You sent me. OK, so I'm going to set the stage here a little bit. You sent me a message last night.
I was wondering if you didn't respond to that message, and I was wondering if you just didn't care or whatever.
I was doing customs. I didn't see.
I didn't know if you were going to reference it on this episode.
Oh, yeah. You can't send a message like that and have me not reference it. You said at 10.02 p.m., you said, I just finished the movie, and frankly, I'm speechless.
That's all I had to say.
I think that's right. I think, like, that is the right reaction to Hackers.
Especially in 2021, like we'll get to it. There's a lot to talk about here, but I definitely feel like the experience of watching this movie in the era has to have been extremely different than coming to it fresh in 2021.
So, okay. I didn't watch this movie in the era.
So that, and I just found that out right before we started recording, and I was shocked to hear that because I was hoping you were coming in here with the experience of like, okay, this is what it was like to see it as a 20-year-old in 1995.
No, because like in 1995, the discourse on this movie in the circles that I was on, which would have been like, this came out before Windows 95. So it was like to set the stage a little
bit.
Hang on.
Let me triangulate here. I think they were contemporary.
So this movie was made.
Oh, you're right. It definitely would have been made before Windows 95.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie was made before people knew what the internet was.
Yes.
Right. But people definitely knew what hackers were because you'd heard about Captain Crunch. You'd heard about Kevin Mitnick. You'd heard about phone freakers and stuff like that. Even in the and it was presented often as it is in this movie, as a thing you hear about on the local or national news, as a threat to the sovereignty of the nation.
Like shady underworld of cyber criminals.
Yeah. Of anarchists and socialists and commies.
Uh-huh.
And
hack the planet.
It was presented like there's a shift in the presentation that happens throughout this movie because they start out talking mostly about phone stuff and modems and dialing in. And then toward the end, it becomes about the internet. And my hunch is that that's represented by the change in understanding of the fact that the internet that happened as this movie progressed. Like, I wonder if I almost feel like they got to the end of the shooting and were like, oh shit, this internet thing is really big. We should tap into this now. Okay. So there are like three movies for computer hackers and nerds.
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can guess.
Hit me. You got them?
Oh gosh. You're saying ones that like genuine nerd hacker types like?
I say that people at least
that people associate with, because like I started to throw out the net, but I don't think anybody
that movie sucks ass.
Right. Like nobody in living the life has any respect for that movie. Gosh, actually, I'm not sure. Is War Games one of them?
War Games is one of them.
Okay.
Sneakers.
Okay, sure.
This one.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Okay. In 1995, this movie came out, and inside the communities of people who were computer nerds in 1995, which was a pretty like large subculture, but small in the general populace at that point, pre Windows 95.
Yes. And also like before, I mean, it's not before there was any big tech money, but before this, like this more recent explosion of like Silicon Valley social media companies had happened, and it all got super marketified by Wall Street. You know what I mean? Like now it is just big money, but back then it was like people were doing this for like liberation of information and stuff like that. It was much more of a like you said, almost like this anarchist collective kind of thing.
The thing that people maybe don't realize about the internet now, the early internet, is that it was like there was a lot of like, yo, here's a site with the anarchist cookbook on it. Right. So if you want to learn how to make pipe bombs, here's a place to do that.
I wasn't quite going straight to destructive.
Well, but it was like there was a lot of like forbidden information.
Sure.
That was ultimately probably relatively harmless for most of the people that accessed it.
Yeah. Or to put another spin on it, like this is an era that I associate with like the EFF and the Well.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like kind of digital hippies sort of, you know,
there was a lot of like, this is a new culture. We're forming a new culture when in fact, it was really just a bunch of old white guys hanging around.
Well, some younger people as well. I mean,
in 1994, it would have been almost all old white guys. Or college age white guys, yes. Like an occasional woman.
But it was definitely more of an anti-establishment thing, as opposed to now it's like kind of the establishment.
Well, it still presents itself as anti-establishment, but it is 100% the establishment. Yes, you are correct. So in 1995, when this movie came out, the discourse was such that I was like, fuck this movie. I'm never going to go see this piece of shit.
Okay, so. But this is where I want to insert this thought then, because I need to know what the discourse was around this movie at the time, because we need to talk about what I thought this movie was going to be versus what it turned out to be.
So this movie and the net were kind of felt, at least in the communities I was part of, and everybody, I'm sure everybody's communities were different. Like they were both viewed a lot in much the same way.
Okay.
So like they were viewed as poor representations of the cultures that you were a part of, which I think is probably like anytime there's a mainstream product about an emerging subculture, I feel like that's probably going to be the reaction inside that subculture, right?
Sure.
Like if you made a mainstream punk rock movie in 1979 or 1980, the people that were actually in that scene are going to think it's a complete load of horse shit.
Yes. Unless it's like the super rare case where like you really thread the needle and you really get it and you actually do it right. But that almost never happens. But
those also usually happen in retrospect. Like Sid and Nancy came way after the actual time. Right.
Sure.
Okay. The opening scene of this movie with the kid, with the courtroom scene.
Well, there's the raid on his kitchen first.
Well, yeah, but they do the whole thing and you don't know that it's a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old or whatever. Yes,
as they pan over to this child, I think he's 11.
Which is very much the Kevin Mitnick experience. Like when Kevin Mitnick was being arrested and put on the run for 2 years and put in court, they didn't fucking tell you he was 16 years old.
Wait, was he really?
Yeah, he was 16. Like he started hacking. I mean, he didn't hack. He just did he bought a weird punch card so he could get free bus rides. Right. But like he started when he was 12, like figuring out how to social engineer his way into free bus rides, and then was doing phone telecom stuff by the time he was 16. So all of his stuff happened, I think, before he was an adult legally.
Was that before this movie?
That was well before this movie.
Okay, so they had that to draw on.
Yeah, he was born in 63, so that would have been like the mid to late 80s.
Well, did he get the like SWAT team raid on his house to arrest him thing?
He was presented as a threat to national infrastructure in the same way that young Zero Cool was.
Well, sure, but also I love in the courtroom like Zero Cool's like horrendous crime is that he crashed Wall Street for a few minutes. Like
1,507 computers.
Like nobody died.
It was the biggest hack of all time, Brad.
Right. But like nobody died. No infrastructure was damaged. It was just some rich people were inconvenienced for a short time. And for that, he was doomed to a computerless existence.
A massive $45,000 penalty and 6 years of no computers. So here's the thing. The discourse around this movie was that people were pissed that it was called Hackers, because in the community, hackers were viewed as a positive and crackers were the bad people who tried to disrupt infrastructure and things like that.
Okay.
Which I think that the people that had seen the film felt didn't represent accurately. But I think having watched the movie multiple times in the modern era, as people say, it feels like a kind of misrepresentation.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, I like this movie a lot. It is a bad movie. I
needed to hear you say that.
Yeah, no, it is.
I needed to hear you say it's a bad movie because some of the things that you texted me throughout the week made me wonder. Once I started watching it, I was like, okay,
it's a really incredibly well-constructed movie with a few glaring problems.
Can I just talk about what I thought this movie was going to be?
What did you think it was going to be?
I mean, we're like past 25 years of cultural osmosis at this point, right? Like this thing has been in the public consciousness for a long time.
Most of our lives.
And like, you see movie posters, you see DVD covers, like you see people quoting it all the time. Here's what I thought this movie was going to be. I expected this to be this like a slick but kind of lighthearted thriller about like a secret world, like an underground world of like edgy young adult cyber criminals that were like doing bank heists and stuff.
You were looking for like enemy of the state,
but more like, again, lighthearted, like kind kids. Of a, like a well, not kids. Like I said, young adult. I'm specifically saying young adult because what I really did not expect was for this to be a fucking high school teen movie. It was a teen movie.
It wasn't for teens.
They were no. I don't mean it was a movie for teens, but it's a high school. They are like a third of this movie is set in a high school. I was like,
Brad, they go to the coolest high school ever.
Do they?
I think it's a cool high school.
What's so cool about that high school?
All the hackers go there.
I mean, I guess.
They have a pool on the roof. I mean, I just, they didn't really have a pool on the roof.
Is this the movie where the pool on the roof joke originated? Or has that been around forever?
No, that's from this movie, I believe.
Is it really?
I'm pretty sure.
Because this came out while I was in high school, and I remember people talking about pool on the roof jokes, and I didn't know if this...
I think that has to be this movie. I've never heard a pool on the roof joke. So
interesting.
Okay. Here is the other thing about this movie is, I mean, it seems prescient now in a lot of ways, but that's just because it shaped the culture in such an insidious and low-lying way, I think. Okay, so The opening scene is perfect with the courtroom with the kid, and he's sitting there, and they're like the prosecutor's going on about what a horrific dirtbag this child is, what a threat they are to the Republic, blah, 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 blah. And then it cuts to this shot of this obviously like prepubescent kid.
Yes.
Who's sitting there in a suit and looking really, really freaked out.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes to maybe the best depiction of social engineering that's ever been put on film.
Okay.
So when
I'll go with you on this journey.
When
I guess.
Old Zero Cool, when old uh-huh. Dade calls into the TV station to hack the TV station.
Okay, yes.
He gets Norm the security guard on the phone and is like, Norm, this is, and then he drops a bunch of names that we all know because it's funny. It's like, you know, I can't remember, but it's references to things.
This is Eddie Vedder from accounting.
Yeah, nerd shit. And he gets Norm to go over and give him the modem number, which is all he needs to get into the system because he's a hacker. Because they know the three main passwords, which actually also is not untrue for the late 90s. Like,
really?
Oh, God. If you there were like 50 passwords that if you had, you could log into like some insane number of people's computers.
Because what is it? Love?
Well, sex, the ones that they God. Use are stupid. Like the number one was password. And then it was password with some fours and zeros and stuff
secret.
That.
Secret was the other one.
Secret
in the movie.
Was a big one. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're not wrong, actually. It didn't really hit me at the time, but that scene of him convincing the security guard to give him all the info was like one of the rare moments where the movie actually seemed like fairly smart and got it kind of right.
Well, and then it does this amazing slingshot from there into one of the all time stupidest computer hacking sessions that you've ever seen on film. Like it has. Like, look, they do the full screen UI where the people are talking to each other, like in the Matrix or whatever.
Yes.
So that people could see what was on the screen and to make it look interesting for audiences at home who don't know what a command line looks like in 1995. Right.
Was that the crash override acid burn kind of adversarial duel?
Yes.
Like the what is it? What's the line? Is it hack with the best, die like the rest? Something like that. I'm looking at it now. You have tread upon my domain and must now suffer. Who are you with like R's and U's instead of full words spelled out?
So here is the thing. If you spent some time in IRC in 1994,
fair,
not unlike the actual vernacular used.
Yes. Not. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't have this like slick, really cheesy looking like Macromedia Shockwave interface that you'd be typing into. But
I mean, that stuff's set up so you can see the text on the screen and they don't have to do extreme close ups and shit like that.
Also, he's wearing sunglasses throughout this entire scene. It's at night in a bedroom with the lights off in front of a computer.
Brad, sunglasses make you look very cool. I don't know if you're aware of this effect.
Like the Matrix's representation of hackers was was like exactly this movie, except done well and like actually cool, at least for the time. Like it's maybe a little dated now, but like
Brad, this movie's really fucking cool.
Sure.
This movie is cool. The costumes in this movie are like, imagine. OK, think about what you were wearing in 1995. I was wearing probably jeans and actually, I was probably wearing exactly what I wear right now, which is like jeans and T-shirts, maybe Dockers and T-shirts because Gap khakis were very popular in the mid 90s where I was. The cutoff T-shirts, the bold prints, the Joey, the kid, the one that's actually a teenager.
Yes, the one who's smoking all the time. Because there's like such a weirdly large amount of smoking in this movie.
That's just welcome to the 90s, man. But the panel shirt that he wears when Freak is like, yo, you need to stop letting your mom dress you. I was like, fuck, I had that shirt, man.
Ooh, that's rough. That's
harsh. I know, it wasn't good. Probably not in 1995, but yeah.
That same scene is one of the few I wrote on in my notes here under the things that kind of gets right scene.
Oh, the clothes?
Not the clothes, but the part where I'm impressed that you keep all the names straight. Joey is the nerdy
Joey
kid.
Joey is the kid, yeah.
And Freak?
Freak
is the guy with the longer hair.
Yeah,
the wiser, like more seasoned.
He is the, yeah, he's like, I would put him as a, if you're ranking the hackers in terms of their eliteness.
Yes,
Brad.
He's like number three, maybe.
He is a mid-tier, below acid burn.
Right.
And he's evaluating the new guy, Crash Override, as he enters into the coolest high school in New York.
The thing about that scene that I found kind of amusing is like how desperate Joey is to come up with his handle.
Yes.
He's like, you got to help me think of a handle. Like, what do you think about Dr. Doom? Like, he throws out a bunch of terrible ones, but like, at the time, that seemed kind of cheesy, I'm sure. But like now, like that's all of Twitch, right? Like everybody who streams on the internet has to come up with a handle like that actually happened, right?
Well, it was the case then too. Like your IRC handle was a large part of your identity.
Sure.
But the thing is, it was all self. Well, first off, it wasn't like you had like a like there wasn't a registrar of identities where only one person could be Dr. Doom. Everybody had this, like there were 5,000 drizzts on IRC at any given moment with numbers after them or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, so there's two things that happen in that first scene. He establishes the first antagonist with acid burn. Doesn't know who it is yet.
Yes.
Right. It has that incredibly stupid pulling the tapes back and forth of robot arms. It is such a bad, wonderful practical effects sequence.
A lot of the kind of montages in this movie are like kind of mwah.
Oh yeah.
In like the worst way. They are so goddamn like the cuts, like they cut back and forth to all these tapes being moved around by these robotic arms, and also with all these like stock clips of like dinosaurs and jet fighters and like the Outer Limits intro.
Well, the Outer Limits intro is because he wants to watch the Outer Limits. So he, like, the whole point of that scene is he's hacking the local TV station to put the Outer Limits on instead of this fascist America First guy.
Oh, right. That's right. I forgot about the America First guy.
Yeah,
that,
dude.
You know what? I forgot to write that on my, like, things it got right. Was, like, this guy is railing about, like, genetic stock, and then they pull the tape out and straight up it's a program called America First. And like, I know about Reagan's use of that phrase as well. I know it's not a brand new thing, but still, like
some fascist anti-fascist iconography there,
right? But I guess actually that does tie into the anti-establishment ethos of like the hacker movement of the era was like very anti-fascist, right?
So like they get so much tone and like some background stuff right throughout this movie. We're not going to go through the whole thing like this, but like I think these first two scenes are the whole movie, right?
Sure.
Really good representation of like the public perception of hackers, the social engineering, which was the primary way you hacked stuff back in the day, and then also the people who are good at it did that, and then on top of it this ludicrous depiction, but also like all those weird close ups and the snap cuts and all that are, I think, supposed to depict what's going on in his brain and like to show you that his brain's he's just moving really fast.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. He's like he's the smartest hacker out there. Like his mom says, he's a genius, but he would never use his knowledge to hurt people.
Exactly. But at the same time, everything in the movie, like he types really slow. They all type so fucking slow.
That is totally on my list of things to point out here is that every time you can tell the movie is trying to be like, look how smart and fast these guys are. Look how elite these hackers are. like the typing is like extraordinarily slow. Like the things they're saying are like completely basic. Like it's kind of that part is kind of embarrassing.
It's really funny.
Like you kind of sold me on those first couple scenes in terms of the perceptiveness of it, because I spent so much of this movie, like I said, coming to terms with what it actually is and not what I thought it was going to be, because this is, I swear to God, one of the cheesiest movies I've ever seen.
Oh, just you need, God, you got to watch it again. Okay.
I think I do, because again, I just was not prepared for how much camp is in this movie. And I spent most of the running time constantly trying to figure out how self-aware, if at all, it is about itself.
It is 100% self-aware, sure? I think.
I still never landed on a definitive answer to that question.
I don't know that the performers are self-aware of what's happening.
Okay.
But I feel like at least the person who wrote the movie is aware of what the movie is.
Okay. I read some quotes from the director of the movie, and I kind of got the sense that he might take it fairly seriously, which is hilarious.
Oh, but I think that's the best. I think that's what makes it good. So knowing what I know about how productions with like script consultants and experts and stuff like that usually go, my assumption is that they brought in some actual consultants on the film who knew what they were talking about. And that's why things like that social engineering scene ended up in the film. They were like, look, computer hacking isn't just sitting in front of a computer and typing a lot. It's also being able to call somebody on the phone and convince them to give you some really important information. The movie does a really good job setting up three antagonists, because the three antagonists are Acid Burn, the hacker, Kate, Angelina Jolie's character.
Yeah.
And then four, actually. Gil, the Secret Service agent, the cop.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
the plague.
The plague.
That fucking guy, man.
So the plague, just so you know, is also the guy who played the Indian guy in Brownface in Short Circuit movies.
Stevens.
Fisher Stevens.
I was not super familiar with him.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a Short Circuit movie since it was in the theater.
That is the right choice, it turns out. So
the plague, like that guy, that character has to be a moment where the movie absolutely knows what it's doing. Like, he is just too over the top for that to be unintentional.
Oh yeah. 100%. Like, he,
parts of this, I question whether they knew how fucking goofball it was, but that guy,
because the thing is, you have to think about it. And for a large portion of what they presumed was going to be their mass market audience, Gil was probably the hero.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
So they had to have an obvious bad guy. Mm-hmm. They had to set up Kate/Acid Burn as the early antagonist, mm-hmm, so that he would have a hacker enemy to go against.
Of course.
And then the realization that they were in fact the same person was a real turning moment for the whole film. Wait, you're him. You're him.
Shocking reveal.
What?
There's some mild sexism around some of that stuff.
There's a lot of fucking sexism when he's like, oh, you're pretty good for a girl.
Yeah. That arcade is like pretty good score for a girl.
Yeah. Was that Wipeout?
I wrote that down. I had actually checked. I think this movie came out 2 weeks before Wipeout came out on the PlayStation.
Oh, good
so
placement.
They had, this was full on the Wizard Super Mario Brothers 3. They got footage of a new game in there before the game came out, but it was an arcade version of Wipeout, which I thought was really funny. Also, all those kind of front on shots of his face while he's playing the game.
I love it. I love those so
much.
The
intensity, like they did it on a green screen. Like, you can tell they comped him on top of a shot of the youth center behind him so they could do all this goofy.
They just project it on behind him?
It might've been rear projection actually, now that you mention it, but in fact it probably was, but like still it's just so fucking goofy.
It's so good. Oh my God. So is the stuff with the barriers in Wipeout though, or is that something added? Like the place that she dies before she gets her high score.
It might not all be Wipeout. There could definitely be some other stuff.
I didn't remember there being like shooting and like stuff you had to blast or anything in Wipeout.
It's Wipeout. Maybe it could be fake Wipeout, but like the ship. I mean, the ships look like Wipeout. The car designs are like spot on. So I assumed it was the real thing.
I felt like there's a Sony logo in there too.
Yes, I believe you do see a PlayStation logo at one point. Also, a lot of power books. I don't know if we should talk about product placement.
Like laptops all look like a little bit like PowerBooks. There was a couple of Toshibas in there too, I think.
Oh my God. So that's something I wrote under the things that kind of gets right. First of all, the laptops are so chunky. Like, oh my God, it was crazy to see those things look like they weigh 30 pounds. Like, they're so thick.
Well, laptops were still pretty unusual in 1995. Like those laptops started at like $3,000.
Right. And the screens were god awful and everything. Yeah. But like, that's kind of why I give it credit for getting that right, is that like, As cheesy as those laptops look in retrospect, like anybody who would self-identify as a hacker or even just like pretty much all software developers develop on laptops these days, right? Like that's the way things went. So they got that, like, you don't see anybody. Well, Lucy, I guess, Joey's confiscated computer that he steals the garbage file with, I think was a full desktop.
Doesn't Dade have a desktop computer too in his house?
Maybe so.
The thing that's interesting, but they had to have laptops because they were using payphones.
You're right. They had to be mobile. They had to be mobile. But I mean, you know, that was like fairly prescient, right?
Kind of like if this was an, like, it's, so this is part of the place the movie's interesting, is because it overlaps phone and internet. Mm. Like four or five years later, it would have been, hey, I need to get a bunch of hacked machines that I can route my shit through so they can't trace me back. Right.
Yeah.
And that would have been kind of accurate, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, that's always been kind of a fun thing to track in movies over time for me. Like Skynet in 1984 was a mainframe under a mountain, in a military installation. It was a central gigantic ass computer. I don't like Terminator 3 at all, but by Terminator 3, it was a distributed network.
Uh-huh.
It was decentralized, so you couldn't just blow up the mountain and kill the computer. And then when Genesis came out, which, like, if you have not seen Terminator Genesis, it is a ridiculous movie.
Is that the one with Christian Bale?
No, that was Salvation. That was the very serious future war one. Oh, Genesis. Yeah. Genesis is the one that does all kinds of time travel fuckery to just reboot the timeline in a really recursive, self-referential way.
Is that the one with Linda Hamilton back?
No, that was Dark Fate, which is also takes itself pretty seriously. Genesis does not, like, I don't think Genesis is a good movie, but you should watch Genesis if you like Terminator, because it's completely ridiculous. But anyway, by the time of Genesis, Skynet is an app.
Oh God!
Like, it's literally like Siri.
Hey Skynet, running
on everybody's mobile devices, and like, it's, anyway, it's fun to watch like the cinematic perception of computers evolve over time like that.
I love that, and like the shots that they do, there are a lot of really fucking awesome stupid shots of the inside of computers that were all done with model. They were all model shots, like the shots of the lightning going up the side of the computer of the of the Gibson.
The Gibson. We'll get to the Gibson.
Yeah. The shot of like the overhead shot where they're superimposing the city, the New York, like shot straight down in the middle of a block.
That's from the intro, right? When he's flying into the city.
Like, they do it a bunch, but then there's a spot where they kind of cut it back and forth with the computer world, yeah, where the roads become circuit traces on a motherboard.
It's like that overhead aerial shot, right?
Yeah.
Like that was really well done. Like I assume they just kind of cobbled together circuit boards to exactly match the street and skyscraper layout. But I was like shocked at how well that practical effect worked.
My understanding is that they built a model that exactly mimicked the part of the street, yes, that they were
like that. But yeah, it's a very pretty seamless dissolve there.
Yeah, it's really like that. There's a lot of really good effects work. There's a lot of really good storytelling. Like I love there's a bunch of really good, especially early on when he like is infatuated with Kate before he realizes that she's acid burn. Where like there's a lot of just like awkward high school nerd like gazes. They're like a little horny, a little angry, and like,
yeah, that's what I meant about it being like a teen, like a high school movie. Like there's the house party scene, you know?
Yeah, the house party scene is a lot.
The house party scene devolves into them in a bedroom, like gushing over how slick this laptop is.
So that's one of the moments that the whole thing turns for me is like the idea that a bunch of nerds break into this girl's bedroom and the thing they're looking at is how fucking awesome her computer is.
Like they're not in there doing drugs or like trying to score
or look up porn on the internet or even anything. They're just like,
it's like, oh
God, this is a fucking P6, man. This is sick.
P6 got a PCI bus, active matrix display.
It's 3 times faster than the Pentiums, man.
This is too much machine for you.
So good. They were going to call it a Pentium Pro.
Oh man.
Also that was a Mac with a,
was it
Motorola 6800 or something?
Yeah, I at least give them credit for that scene where they're rattling all the specs and stuff off. That like they actually, at least the terms they were throwing out were like fairly relevant to the time. PCI bus, like they're like RISC architecture is going to change everything. Although like RISC CPUs have been around for ages by that time, right? But
that was the dialogue at the time. Like Apple was going RISC.
Isn't that when PowerPC was, yeah, becoming a big marketing term? Like. PowerPC and Pentium became the two known CPU brands, and PowerPC was the RISC one.
Yeah, and they were like, RISC is going to change everything because you're going to be able to go faster. It's going to be simpler computing. It's going to be easier to write code for, more powerful code.
Like Apple was slapping the word power on everything they did.
Uh-huh. And like at the same time, they also do stuff like Dade has this leather jacket that shows up through the movie a lot. And it's very clearly like the one piece of cool clothes that makes his outfits cool no matter what else he's wearing.
It's like the motorcycle jacket, right? With the padding,
yeah,
on it.
Yeah. I think it's a rollerblade. I think it's like a skate, like a skate.
Also,
rollerblades everywhere, dude, man.
Dude, there are so much rollerblading in this movie. I wrote possibly the most 90s movie to ever exist.
Oh, it is far and away.
Is what I wrote on here. And the rollerblading is a big part of that.
The fact that there's a bar that is built for people to rollerblade around in, yep, as a, yep, main scene in the movie.
You know, when I said a big chunk of this movie takes place in a high school, another big chunk of this movie takes place in a youth center. Like it's literally like the teen center.
It's called the Cyberdalia, I think,
where they go to hang out and hack and play that wipeout game. But the other thing I was going to say about it being very 90s is like some of those shots of models, some of those practical shots like that city to circuit board fade trick are really nice. Some of them. Some of them are like straight out of 90s FMV games. Like the,
oh yeah,
they like, first of all, they reuse so much of that footage, so much of those effect shots, like they just use over and over.
Brad, I'm going to suggest that this movie influenced the 90s FMV games fairly significantly.
They were kind of contemporaneous in a lot of cases. Fair. Some of them were coming out in that, but yes, more of them came out after, you're right. But like the one, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. The shot where it's like, they use it over and over as a backdrop when he like, every time he like breaks through, like he cracks a system or like
gets through a layer of ice. You mean
you start seeing all these equations like flying around, oh, on, yeah, this like purple background and spinning and flipping over themselves. Like it's the cheesiest shit I've ever. They reuse that same first person shot of like flying through this tunnel of circuit boards like 4 times.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. But it's so good. Think about, and think awful.
Think about what, like if you were going to the movies with your mom in like 1995, and you were 12 years old, how would you sell, hey, some computer shit is happening now to a normal audience?
You are not wrong.
Math. Guys, there's, yep, a lot of math.
That's
this
right.
Math is really fucking scary.
It's flying all over the place.
Okay, so fast forward a bit. When the two cops are sitting in the car and the one cop is reading the manifesto, kind of scoffing at it.
What is
it,
like the, what does he call it? Like the Bible of the Bod or something like that.
We control the hack the planet, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, and the other one's like, man, this is really fucking cool. He's like, what the fuck do you mean? This is some commie bullshit. And he's like, I don't know, man. It sounds cool to me.
Also, that was Mark Anthony.
Wait, what?
That the other agent there is Mark Anthony, the singer, and
the young guy.
Yes. And one time Jennifer Lopez husband.
Well, OK, so you
like
know
I was watching it with my girlfriend. I was watching it with my girlfriend and she called that out and she was like, oh, my God, that's Mark Anthony.
Did you catch the other big cameo?
Don't tell me. Well, there's so like that was another thing. I wanted to talk about the cast of this movie as well, because the range of people that are in it blew my mind. I knew Angelina Jolie was in it.
Yeah, but, but she was in it before. This was before she was famous.
Yeah, I think this was this before or after Gio, which I think was her like kind of big, actual serious breakout role.
I feel like she shot this before Gio broke out, and then they changed the marketing. Oh, okay. So no, then this is before that.
Way before that. This was definitely her. Just like, in fact, how old was she in this?
She probably would have been 20.
She was 20. Holy crap! You're right. Yeah, she was like practically.
I think she's my age.
How old was Johnny Lee Miller though? Because that's the one I really. He was only 23.
Matthew Lillard is like 60 in this movie. Matthew Lillard seems like he's ready for a hip replacement about halfway through this thing. I love Matthew Lillard, but damn.
I get what they were going for with the Matthew Lillard character. I don't think they got there for me.
He's Spicoli.
He just,
basically.
Yeah, totally. Yes. He is the like slightly older, wackier.
But also he's in the high school classes for some reason.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think he was overselling it a little much for me.
Oh,
but
we should probably preface this by saying there's going to be spoilers for the 30-year-old movie. But
I assume anybody listening who cares enough to listen to this has seen the movie already.
Yeah. I
don't know that you can spoil this movie.
Fair. Like it's just spectacle worth absorbing and enjoying. The act two denouement when the hack is complete. He has Dade has the discs.
Yes.
Chucks it in the trash can. And then he's screaming on the way out to the. Well, first off.
Oh, that's at the end. That's like kind of the climax of the whole movie.
The climax of the movie. Yeah. They set that up really well. And I never caught this before I watched it last night. But the scene where he's doing the quick draws on the floppy disks.
So you like that? Maybe there's a connection I missed, but at the time, like the idea of like quick drawing floppy disks out of your belt was like the cheesiest, embarrassing shit.
It seems like pure cheese, right?
Yeah.
But then he has to palm a floppy disk and chuck it in the trash at the end.
Sure.
And he does this thing where he's like, he's trying to fucking incept, the data's in the trash can
right.
to Matthew Lillard he's getting hauled off screaming hack the planet.
They're trashing our rights.
Right. They're trashing us. They're trashing our rights.
Sure enough, the trash can is on the right.
The trash can is on the right. Yeah. It's like it's very stupid, but it's also really, really well done.
It's a very movie thing to do. A very cheesy movie thing to do. But gosh, I was trying to think who else. Like Lorraine Bracco is in this movie, pre-Sopranos.
Yes.
Executive lady.
I feel like she was billed high because she was a draw at the time.
Well, so she was billed at the end, which might be the like here's the biggest actor we got thing.
Yeah.
God, who else was I surprised to see in this? I'm trying to think. There might have been one or two.
The security guy, the other IT guy.
Oh, fucking Penn Jillette is in this movie as the IT guy. What?
Yeah.
Johnny Lee Miller, to me, the first thing I ever saw Johnny Lee Miller in was Trainspotting.
Oh, Jesus. I forgot he's that guy.
He is Sick Boy in Trainspotting, which is like as different a role as you could possibly imagine. Like
he's very fresh faced in this movie, comparatively speaking.
And it's just so fucking campy. And then like Trainspotting, he is like a really rough living heroin addict, you know, and like to go backwards and see him in this was like such a hard thing to adjust to. It's so weird. Also, like, what was anybody thinking when they took these roles? Like, I really want to know what was going through their minds, because I always assume, like, you tell me, I've never been a famous actor. It might surprise you to hear.
This is just shock me.
But I have always assumed that like 60% of what's going through any actor's mind when they take a role is how is this going to advance my future career? Right. Because like taking an embarrassing role in a flop is like death for an actor. Right. So like, what was anybody thinking when they took a role in this movie in terms of what it would do for their careers?
I feel like some actors do that. I feel like other like the place where most of the people in this movie were like Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie probably was like, hey, it's a feature film and they want to pay me.
Actually,
studio.
You were totally right. Like the thought process I'm describing, I think, is what you have when you're at the top, like when you've climbed all the way up. Like then you're in a
or when you've had your break, I think.
Then you're doing a balancing act of wanting to stay on top. But you're totally right. If like I think I might I might be assigning a little more importance and prominence to this movie than it had at the time.
Yeah, I mean, this was a flop. Just to be clear, this movie bombed.
Oh, I didn't even think to look at the. Oh, wow. You're not kidding.
Yeah, no, it was a, it was an unbelievable stinker.
$7.5 million at the box office against a budget of $20 million. So, yeah, you're not wrong.
And wow. I think it's original. I think it's like reviews. I think if you look up on Rotten Tomatoes, I think that's probably pretty bad, too.
Yes, it's like it's in the 20s, 30s, 35%.
Like nobody got it at the time.
Like I looked it up. It's not the Wikipedia page. It might have been IMDb. Somewhere I was reading about the movie described it as like they sort of lumped it in with The Room. Like, I don't think it's that bad.
Well, this was way before The Room.
No. I mean, like in terms of the way people regard it, like people look at it as this like unbelievably cheesy, campy cult classic. Like this, you know, it's a thing people bond over for how goofy and bad it is. Right. Like that's the way they were portraying it. And like that made more sense when I read that. I was like, OK. Now I understand this movie's place in cinematic history.
Can I read the Owen Gleiberman, a quote from the Owen Gleiberman review from Entertainment Weekly?
Sure.
What's most grating about Hackers, however, is the guileless way the movie buys into the computer kid as elite rebel mystique currently being peddled by magazines like Wired.
That hits a little close to home, I think. This is the moment for me to throw out my favorite line in the movie, which I wrote down.
Okay.
You want to be elite? You got to do a righteous hack.
Oh, can we talk about the elite thing? Because like, I know exactly how this happened. People would type leet. Like this was around the time that leet speak was developing and people were doing that shit all the time in IRC and Usenet and stuff like that.
So, yeah. So I wrote down a list of things that A, I had heard for years and years outside of this movie. And B, one of those is elite. And I wanted to ask off the back of that, is this where the term elite picked up its usage or was it already happening?
So I'm not a linguist. And I have not done any research at all into this topic. I'm doing this entirely from memory. I remember leet speak starting pre-95 on IRC and stuff like that. I'm not entirely certain that is correct. I would welcome corrections. However, my feeling is that, and I kind of don't want to know if this is wrong, but my feeling is that, you know, that scene, you know, the bit in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas where they infiltrate the sheriff's convention in Vegas and the sheriffs are talking about the hierarchy of weed users of the marijuana fiends.
Sure.
And it's like, if you do this, then you're a dope fiend. And if you do this, you're cool. And if you're, and like they know the words, but they don't understand the context and the fact that they're not representative of any kind of hierarchy.
Sure.
This feels like exactly the same thing.
Right.
Where like only the most elite. You have to do a righteous hack against a Gibson or a mainframe in order to become one of the elite.
Becoming elite requires some like ceremonial practice.
So my other theory is that this movie was so stupid that people started mocking it by saying L337 everywhere. And then that became part of the mainline vernacular.
That was absolutely my assumption, was that people ironically took the word elite from this movie and started using it earnestly.
The thing is, though, a lot of this, like they got a lot of stuff right. Like the fashion stuff ended up being prescient, I think, in a lot of cases. Like
it's definitely very accurate to the period, right? Like it was, you know, 90s fashion is pretty embarrassing, but like it got a lot of that stuff pretty right, right?
Well, I don't see, it's difficult for me to say because I lived in a small town in Tennessee or Knoxville, which is a mid-sized town in Tennessee.
Well, you still saw like, you know, mass media, like you saw what was on MTV and stuff like that at the time. Like I think it's.
Yeah, it was definitely like a. Like nerdcore punk rock aesthetic filtered through a slightly futuristic lens. Right.
Right. Right. And like a decent amount of neon color and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like,
the thing about language, like I really do think a lot of like, obviously a lot of like the lightning running up the side of the computer showing it as the giant tower representing a computer is stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like they got a lot of heat for that in 95, but like, I think the thing that hurt him with the community, A, is that it wasn't a community full of people that understood nuance or anything other than a straight literal interpretation of the medium.
Sure.
But I think it was the crackers hackers thing. Like the idea that they were presenting hackers as bad people really upset people back then. Like we got, if we called a if we wrote a story even 10 years later in Maximum PC, if we wrote a story and described someone as a hacker when they broke into a network or something, we would get angry letters from people.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know people still cared about that late.
It's funny because it's completely gone now. Nobody even
is it.
I haven't heard anybody say cracker in 10 years, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I do still see like perfectly, you know, lawful software developer types occasionally talk about like hacking on code, not hacking into systems, but like just noodling around with their own development, referring to that as hacking. I still see people say that.
I mean, the idea of hacking as it was then was that it was an additive experience where you take different things that work and make them work together in an interesting way.
Exactly. Totally.
It's always weird. It was very much a 90s high school movie thing to put a bunch of like 28-year-olds in and make them look like high schoolers.
Granted, you would have seen this in the theater on 35mm, but not on like VHS for a long time. But now watching a 1080p version, it is again very clear that like Johnny Lee Miller's 5 o'clock shadow and chest hair really do not make him look like a high school student. Like he definitely looks like
he looks young compared to the rest of them, compared to Matthew Lillard, who was like 38 at that point.
Yeah. Probably. But yes, definitely does not look like a high school student at all. Like, I guess like Angelina Jolie kind of can pass for a high school student there. And that Joey definitely rates as a kid, as a teenager.
I think he actually was a kid, but I didn't bother to look him up. Jesse Bradford is his name. There's another review quote here that's really good. The Washington Post Joe Brown says, "How do you make typing look exciting?"
Maybe do it a little faster to start.
Los Angeles Times David Cronkey says, "It gives you more insight into the minds of Hollywood hacks than of computer hackers."
I swear to God, like some of those shots of him typing is like barely more than hunting and pecking. I feel like they could have just sped it up or something.
The Chicago Sun-Times Roger Ebert gave one of the rare thumbs up reviews.
Really?
And said, "This movie is well directed, written, and acted. And while it is no doubt true that in real life, no hacker could do what the characters in this movie do, it is no doubt equally true that what hackers can do would not make a very entertaining movie."
Ebert had a lot of unconventional opinions, a lot of surprising opinions. Like
he was also a nerd.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah. But that was also one of the ways you knew that Ebert was truly authentic, was that like is how many divergent opinions he had on big movies, like specifically a lot of ones that are identified by the mainstream as bad movies. And then you go look and see that he gave it a 4-star review. Like he did not give a shit about mass opinion.
And like the thing, I mean, OK, so there's a bad continuity error where they reuse footage of the press conference of Joey's arrest in the scene immediately preceding Joey's arrest.
Before it actually happens. But I'm not so worried about continuity errors in this movie. Well,
and to me, that's them. They like, my feeling is that they were using that as stand-in because they don't actually show Joey really in that. Like you can see it if you look, but if you look at it, like the thing you see is the cop talking to the camera about what a threat hackers are and them making fun of that. Oh God, we haven't talked about Razor and Blade at all, but Jesus, the TV guys.
Oh yeah, totally. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't worry about continuity too much in a movie like this, but it's a really well put together movie. Like the whole thing is foreshadowed. They set up everything. They established the entire arc of the movie in the first like 15 minutes. And then it pulls through. It is a, like, the practical effects, the special effects are all really good, even when they're stupid. It conveys the thing that it means to convey to an audience, which if you think about, like I said, if you think about the context of computers in 1994, when this movie was being made, people didn't have computers.
Yeah.
Like it was unusual if you went to somebody's house and they were like, "Oh yeah, you want to check out my PC?"
Yeah.
Like it's wrong. Yeah. It's a lovely artifact. I like this movie a lot.
I let's see. We've gotten through most of the stuff I wrote down. A couple things we haven't touched on. So I mentioned I couldn't decide if this movie knew how fucking cheesy it is or not. But there were two I wrote down. There are two camp moments in this thing that truly worked for me.
Okay.
The first one is the nighttime handoff where I never know if I should call him Zero Cool or Crash Override. I'm not sure where he ended up there. I always felt like deep down he was always Zero Cool.
We all contain multitudes, Brad.
The nighttime handoff where Johnny Lee Miller goes to hand the garbage disc to the Plague.
Oh.
And he fucking shows up skitching on the side of like a taxi cab on a skateboard. And he literally drives by on the skateboard and like snatches it out of his fingers and doesn't even stop. And they just keep going. Like, that was the moment where I was like, okay, I think maybe this movie actually does know what it is.
Oh, God. It apps. Yeah. The direct. Yeah. Okay.
And then the other one was the, and this is like Razor and Blade kind of play into this, where they kind of popped the hack the planet, hackers around the world montage moment at the end. Like, practically like snapped his fingers. It's like, all right, hackers of the world have to mobilize to our defense. Like, we need you. And it's like three shots. What is it? It's like, I think it's a shot. There's a shot in Japan. There's a shot in maybe Russia.
Yeah.
And there was one other. Where else did they go?
They just do establishing shots and then do close ups of somebody in a studio.
They do a couple of close ups of like, oh, these people are clearly in Japan. These people are clearly in Russia. They're all speaking their local language. But it was just such a like stereotypical like hackers are everywhere. They're all around us. They're in every country.
But that was the thing. That was the like if you were a buzz cut military guy, like this army of anarchist computer hackers,
internationalists.
Yeah. Was this globalists?
This is the Fifth International.
Yeah, it was the threat, man.
Totally. I get it. Like but again, that worked for me like that. But yeah. In an incredibly cheesy way, it was just like, wow, this is as cliched as it could be. But also it is really getting the point across.
The sequence when they go meet Razor and Blade and are like, hey, we need help. And like what a prescient view of social media. Like, hey, we have all this ridiculous shit. We need your help. And they're like, well, we have this TV deal going, so I don't know, man. And then they're like, ah, what the fuck? Let's do it anyway. Like, it is the only thing they got wrong is that like the TikTok house people would not come on board to help save the planet in for case of an ecological collapse
for less than like five figures an hour.
Also, yeah, the idea that the threat here, we didn't even talk about the main plot, which is the guy who wanted money. He's going to capsize a bunch of oil tankers on purpose and then pin it on these kids because that's believable in 1995, which it actually probably was.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. It captures fear of computers, like the idea that they can't control manually the ballast and the like they're just at the mercy of these kids because the computers have taken over everything is such a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I love about that final montage is he's like, it's like being, it's kind of, when Matthew Lillard's is kind of like being God, man. and
he's got the most 90s Max Headroom thing of like a bunch of TVs behind him broadcasting him, like the same footage is being sent out is also on the TVs behind him. Like it's God.
Well, but then they show Skylab, like the satellite that they show is Skylab.
Huh. Okay.
Which literally like, you know, burned up over Australia in 1978 or 79 or something. Anyway. It's such a weird good movie.
It's man, it's something. The only other thing I think that we haven't touched on that I wrote down here is I love / roll my eyes at the fact that basically all of the hacking in this movie is done on macOS in the GUI.
Yeah.
Like except for the moments where they are hacking in some, like I said, some ridiculous looking like Shockwave or HyperCard looking UI.
It has to be HyperCard, I think, because it would have been before Shockwave, wouldn't it?
Shockwave came out the same year. It wasn't. Actually, I looked it up for the Macromedia bought Shockwave that year. So it did.
Oh, it existed before.
Technically exists, but probably wasn't in wide use. But yeah, maybe it was HyperCard.
Maybe they were using it for titles or something on TV.
But when they weren't doing the ridiculous, like gigantic text, like neon looking, glowing everything that was clearly fake, it was all macOS in the GUI. Like when he copies the garbage disk, he literally drags the floppy disk icon onto a thing. There is nary an actual command line in this movie. Like the idea of hacking and this was like System 7 era macOS. You know, like the stereotype is like everybody in Hollywood, especially in the 90s, the stereotype was creatives all use Macs.
Oh, yeah.
In publishing and in video production, like anybody in creative digital fields was using a Mac. Like, I wondered if that just trickled down from there.
I think they used laptops because they didn't have to deal with refresh rates and scan lines.
OK.
Instead of CRTs.
Yeah. And there were no desktop LCDs back then.
No desktop LCDs then. I love like there's some stuff like I think Nikon has a Supreme sticker on his laptop.
Lord Nikon is the best hacker name in that whole movie.
Oh, it's so fucking good.
Lord Nikon.
Also, like that movie had kind of shocking representation for 1995.
Yeah. Like I felt like that kind of tied into the hacker ethos a little bit. I mean, again, like they're pretty sexist toward Angelina Jolie on occasion, but
I think that also is representative of the time, unfortunately.
That's, you know, fair.
I like that they let her hold her own. I really wish.
That's fair. Like they do portray her as elite.
Yeah, is the most elite.
She is pretty elite. Yeah, like she is kind of the end boss that he has to take down to prove that he's the best, right?
I mean, so that's the interesting thing is the reason this movie works is they unroll they introduce the antagonist in a really specific order. So it's Acid Burn, Kate, Gil, Plague.
Yes.
And then they take them down in the reverse order, except for Gil never really gets his comeuppance because, you know.
Well, he is just the kind of amoral arm of the law, right? Like he is just there to serve the government. He's the arm of the state. Like that's all he is.
He's lawful neutral.
Right. He is not there to serve his agenda. He's serving the state's agenda. And so like whoever is the baddest hacker is his enemy. And once he realizes it's not Zero Cool, it's the Plague.
Yeah. All enmity shifts.
Yeah. Yeah. Elite, crash. Like I wrote down a list of terms that I have heard for years and years. Crash Override, Acid Burn, Zero Cool, Hack the Gibson.
Yeah.
Elite. Like there were so many things I heard in this movie that was like, oh my God, okay, that's what that means. That's where that came from.
Oh, Brad. I had the same experience. Like 4 years ago, my friend Frank was like, you got to watch this movie. You've never seen Hagrid's, you got to watch this movie. And then I got the flu and I was like, oh God, it's on Hulu. I'll watch it.
What a fever dream.
And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, weird movie to watch with like 102 degree fever.
I bet.
I absolutely love it. I'm so glad we got to share this moment together, Brad.
I am very glad to know what this movie is now.
I think if you rewatch it, you're going to like it.
I can see how repeat viewings might bring one to appreciate it.
It's a delight.
I don't know that I'll get back to it anytime soon, but maybe someday.
Oh, God, we didn't even talk about the music is incredible.
Oh, you know, I meant to look up the soundtrack for this because it was like kind of not terrible. Let's see. Here's right.
Kind of not terrible. Jesus, Brad.
Yeah. Looking. Yes. Okay. I thought I recognized a lot of the stuff. And sure enough, it's like Underworld, Prodigy, Orbital, Stereo MCs. Like it was a lot of like pretty trendy or about to be trendy music of the era. Right.
I would describe it as probably about to be trendy music of the area.
95 era. In my mind, 95 is like definitely before Prodigy like really broke on MTV. Right. Like when did
I didn't know about Prodigy probably for another 2 years.
When did Firestarter come out? Firestarter was like a year after this. So yeah. Like that was the moment for me when like once the Firestarter video was all over MTV was like, OK, techno is happening now. Also, the term techno sounds so archaic now.
I mean,
but, you know, you're not wrong. Like pretty good. And more to the point, very appropriate soundtrack.
No Crystal Method, though. It needed some Crystal Method.
No Chemical Brothers. Yeah. But, you know, they did a pretty good job. I mean, it's pretty telling that there are two additional volumes of Hackers soundtracks. I mean, music inspired by the original motion picture Hackers.
Well, of course, yeah.
Like volume 2 and volume 3, they put out more albums that had like Moby.
So you think you can hack? I was surprised there wasn't any Fatboy Slim in here. It feels like there's some Fatboy Slim beats in here, but not.
Sure.
Anyway, it was a weird time for music. It's also the pre-industrial stuff. Because like 4 years later when they were making The Matrix, 3 years later when they were making The Matrix and that came out, that was all like
way heavier.
Chemical Brothers and in Dust Brothers, I think. I can't remember.
Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Like that's probably some Ministry on there or something. I don't know.
I just realized a few weeks ago that the beat from the club in The Matrix is the Dragula beat. Mm-hmm.
It sure is.
I had no idea.
It sure is.
Anyway.
Hackers, man.
What a treat.
What an experience that was.
Yeah. What a fun thing. I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. If you did, let us know. If you didn't, let us know, too. I mean, we don't do these very often, but it's fun to kind of dip into the pop culture on a moment to moment. I think this is an important one.
Yes, for sure. I really enjoyed this. I mean, it's always a little bit of an ask for people if they haven't seen the movie. They have to go watch a movie before they can listen to this. But then again, I bet a lot of our audience has seen this movie already.
Like the reaction when I posted on the Discord a few days ago that we were thinking about watching Hackers this week.
It was strong.
Overwhelmingly positive.
It was strong.
So, you're not wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. If you like this, if you want to see us do this again, I'm totally down. And also if you do, like movie suggestions would be great. Like I still, on your list of important movies, I haven't seen War Games.
What?
We should probably do War Games. Even if people don't like this episode, I'm going to commit to doing War Games because we should.
Okay. God. Oh yeah. War Games is a,
you know what? I've probably seen the first Tron, but it's been so, if I have, it's been so long, I've forgotten everything about it. So
I don't like the first Tron.
Well, that's a valid, that's still valid.
I've never seen The Net.
I haven't seen The Net either.
Yeah.
Maybe, okay. I hope people like this because now I want to do all of these.
I know you're a Sneakers aficionado.
I have not seen Sneakers.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen any of these movies.
Oh yeah, Sneakers is probably where. Wow, do you like Dan Aykroyd when he's really unhinged?
Oh, I don't know. I met him one time and he was pretty unhinged.
Yeah,
at the time. So, sure.
Wow, Sneakers is real good.
What's Robert Redford?
Yeah, Robert Redford and Dan Aykroyd are the two leads.
Is it a quote unquote hacking movie?
It's so fucking good.
Like I've always is it camp as well, or is it pretty? I mean, more so?
Look, all hacking movies from that time period are camp at this point. But
I've always gotten the sense that Sneakers is the one people kind of respect more.
Sneakers and War Games are both very serious movies about this subject, whereas Hackers
is a less serious.
So okay, Hacker is like The Core. Like, you've seen The Core, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, The Core is the movie where Hilary Swank is a disgraced space shuttle pilot who has to pilot an unobtainium-powered Earth ship to the center of the Earth to save the planet and get the core, core re-spinning.
I think I might need to see that, too.
So the thing about The Core, the thing you should know is that John Rogers wrote it, and John Rogers is a fantastic screenwriter who knew exactly what he was doing, and that every person down the line thought it was a serious science fiction movie.
Okay.
Like, Hilary Swank came off of Million Dollar Baby onto the fucking Core.
Yikes.
And is like, and brings all of the gravitas of, Boys Don't Cry, not Million Dollar Baby. Million Dollar Baby would have been much later.
Yes.
But yeah, brings all the gravitas of an Academy Award winning role to disgraced space shuttle pilot saving the world by going to the center of the Earth and blowing up nuclear bombs to get the Earth's core re-spinning. Is a very good movie.
We should maybe make this a thing. I enjoyed this. It's nice to go back and fill in all these little gaps in your cultural knowledge.
Reintroduce you to the culture, Brent.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
You got to do a righteous hack.
Man.
You got to do a righteous hack.
You can never have too many, feel the burn.
All any of us can ever aspire to is to do one righteous hack in our lives.
What I want to know is what happened. Do you think Crash and Burn ended up getting married? Like, they went off and had a picket fences, opened a security consulting company.
God, that last scene actually is just like so
so cringy.
Oh my God. Let's just get half naked in this pool and make out while our names flash on these skyscrapers. Like, it was just so.
Look, they went to MIT. They opened a security consulting company, probably made a bunch of money in the .com 1.0 boom.
You're probably right. I like to think they stayed underground and stayed true to their roots, but so many people have not done that. I don't know.
Literally none of them do.
They all make a ton of money and become the establishment.
Yep. Well, and on that note,
depressing note, let's call it into this. Hey,
yeah, this is as always, this is a 100% listener supported podcast. So thank you so much to all of our patrons for their support. We really appreciate it. But a special thanks to our executive producer tier patrons, Andrew Slowski, The Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chappell, Jill Krauska, Twinkle Twinkie, David Allen, and James Kamek.
Yeah, thank you for making this possible.
If you want to join them and another, let's see, hold on, 2,646 patrons of the podcast.
Yeah.
You can on our Discord by going to patreon.com/techpod. That's patreon.com/techpod and signing up for as little as $2 a month, where you get access to the Fabulous Tech Pod Patreon or monthly, our monthly patron only episodes. Last month, we kind of did a potpourri.
Yeah.
What did we talk about? We answered some more Q's. We turned more Q's into A's.
Talked a little bit about stuff we're hacking on.
Ooh, ongoing projects. And yes,
did some planning.
So some glimpses in the future, a little bit of extra Q's into A's.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Patreon is a fabulous, fabulous place just to hang out and you spend time with nerds who like the same things as you, probably. If you want to have an extended conversation about Hackers, you can have that right now.
I assume it'll be bubbling up throughout the week.
Did you see the game that people were playing yesterday in the main channel?
No,
maybe it was in this week. No, the main channel. So there's this web thing that was going around on Twitter yesterday. That's like, find a set of 10 words that are the least related.
Oh, I did see that
linguistically.
Yes, I did that yesterday.
How'd you do?
I think it was in the 98th percentile ish. It was a pretty good score. I took issue with, I looked at their methodology. Of course I took issue because I didn't make 99, but
wow.
I'm trying to think, I wish I had saved a screenshot. The words that they said were too close together on mine were words that really did not seem like they should be related.
I had kelp and stamen, it said, were too related. And I guess they are both plant related.
Oh, but I did take a screenshot. It was flange and substrate, they said for me.
Substrate. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. Your CPU's got a flange.
Yeah, that one. And then let's see.
It didn't take boole. I tried to get boole.
Boson and placidity, it said, were pretty close together, which what? One of those is a role for a person on a ship. The other one is a mental state of mind, like a state of being.
Oh, B-O-S-U-N, not B-O-S-O-N.
Well, it looks like boatswain. Oh, yeah, I guess it can be spelled B-O-S-U-N, but like boatswain is like the
traditional. Placid waters. There's a through line there.
Sure.
They did this by analyzing.
Stupid algorithms.
They did this by analyzing frequency of words and sentences, didn't they? Over a large sample.
Oh, I have to go back and look at that. I didn't know people on the server were talking about that. That would be fun to read about.
People were like, first people were finding their high scores and then people were going for their lowest possible scores.
Nice.
Which was much more fun.
It says the score is computed by taking the average semantic distance between each of the words. These distances are computed by measuring how often the words are used together in similar contexts.
Huh. Interesting. So,
yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you to all of our patrons. Everyone, we do really appreciate the support. And yeah. It helps keep the podcast going. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we will be back next week. Oh, if you're not going to chuck into the Patreon, that's cool, too. Just tell people about the show.
We love getting tweets.
The tweets are always good.
Go find people who like the movie Hackers and tell them to listen to this podcast.
Yeah. And if you want to send a question in about Hackers or other movies you think would be good, mm-hmm. a perfect email address for that would be
techpod@content.town.
That's techpod@content.town, Brad?
Oh, techpod@content.town.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Hack the planet!